Welcome to Tori Mecha, Nachiomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we'll be studying Yechezkel, Perikud Zion, Chapter 17. In Perikud Zion, Yechezkel was told by God to convey a message to the people using a chidah, a riddle. Chur chidah u'mashol mashal el b'Yisrael. The riddle in our perik, Perikud Zion, centers around a metaphor which involves an eagle. Kol amar Hashem Elokim, ha-nesher ha-gadol gadol ha-knafayim, Erech ha-ever, malei ha-notza, asher lo ha-rikma. This eagle is a big eagle with great big wings, knafayim, feathers, and a rikma, fancy, impressive plumage. This is actually not the first time we've encountered a metaphor involving an eagle's wings in Sefer Yechezkel. In fact, just in the last parak, Perek Tet Zion, God is personified as an eagle taking an abandoned baby under his wing, acting as her benefactor. The protective wing in Perek Tet Zion was a metaphor for God's marriage to Yerushalayim, the people of Israel. Let's keep that in mind as we read more about the eagle in our story. We'll want to figure out who the eagle in our story represents. But let's get back to the text. So, learning more about this eagle, Ba'al Levanon Vayikach et Samaret Ha'erez. This eagle comes from the north, from Lebanon, and takes hold of a tree. Vayitnehu Bistezera, Kach Amei Rabim. And he plants the tree, he waters this tree. And of all things, the tree grows into a well-endowed grapevine. Vayitzmach Vayhila Gefen Soracha Shiflat Koma. With low-hanging strong branches, turned toward the eagle. Its roots are well established. Let's stop here for a moment. Here, we're getting at some imagery we saw earlier in Yechezkel. Let's remember the last time we encountered a grapevine. It was a couple prakim ago, back in Perek Tet Vav. That grapevine, we will remember, did not bear fruit. It represented the nation of Yehuda, devoid of their mitzvot. Let's keep that thought in mind as we continue in our parak. The next thing that happens is rather unexpected. Vahi nesher echad gadol, gadol knafayim v'rav notza. Another eagle, another nesher, comes along. And like the first eagle, this nesher is also described as gadol, gadol knafayim, big, with big wings. He also has many feathers. But this second eagle is not described with the rikma and ever that the first one is. Be that as it may, what happens next is pretty strange. V'hine hagefen hazot kafna shorosheha alav v'daliotav shilchalo lahashkot ota me'urugot mata'a. The grapevine, which used to have its branches turned in the direction of the first nesher, the eagle responsible for planting her, now turns toward the second nesher, turning its branches and even its roots toward the second nesher, looking for sustenance from the second bird. The reason this is strange is because the grapevine had a really good situation going with the original nesher who planted her. El sadeh tov el mayim rabim hishtula. Lasot anaf v'laset peri liot legefen aderet. The first eagle had planted the grapevine in a good field with plenty of water, mayim rabim, enough for her to become a fruit-producing, glorious tree. Ko amar Hashem Elokim titzlach. God says, can she, this grapevine, succeed under these circumstances? That language reminds us of language that was used back in Perek Tet Vav, questioning the usefulness of the non-fruit-bearing grapevine. Bearing that in mind, it seems like the Navi is telling us that turning toward the second nesher can only serve to compromise the stability of the grapevine's roots and her ability to produce fruit. Halot sharashanin yinatek v'apiryaya koseis v'yavesh kol tarfei tzimchata divash. This betrayal of the first eagle will cost her. When the wind blows, she will become uprooted, causing her to dry out and wilt. The whole picture is reminiscent of the maiden in the last parak, who strays from the God who saved her at the time of her need. In line with that, the grapevine in our parak strays from the eagle who planted her with so much care, pledging allegiance to another, different eagle. The promiscuous behavior of both the maiden and the grapevine will be the ultimate cause of their downfall. The burning question in this chidah, this riddle, is who exactly is represented by these eagles and the grapevine. The psukim in our parak, in psukim yud aleph through yud chet, spell out an answer. They suggest that all this is a mashal for the political circumstances of the time. The psukim go on and tell us this. Hine, Bamelch Bavel Yerushalayim, Vaykachet Malkah, Vetzareha, Vyaveotam Elav Bavela. The king of Bavel of the time, Nebuchadnezzar, is actually the first eagle. He is the one who exiled Yehuda's king Jehoiachin and important officers to Bavel. The text goes on and tells us, Vayikach mizer hamlucha, vayichrot ito brit, vayavoto ba'ala, et eleha aris lakach, liyot memshala shvela, levilti hitnase, lishmor brito lamda. Nebuchadnezzar took the remaining Jews under his wing, so to say. How so? Well, he allowed them to be ruled by a king of their own, from the royal family. The only caveat was that this king would enter into a treaty with Nebuchadnezzar, under which he would have to answer to Nebuchadnezzar. This king, which is King Zedekiah, wouldn't have complete autonomy. Like the low-lying branches of the grapevine who turned toward their source, Zedekiah would have to answer to Nebuchadnezzar. His reign would be limited to the terms of the treaty. So what happened in the end? The Psukim tell us, Vayimrod bo, lishloch malachav Mitzrayim, latet lo susim. Zedekiah tires of the second fiddle role. Instead of remaining subject to Nebuchadnezzar, he turns to Mitzrayim for aid. That's the second eagle. Mitzrayim is his new ally and the source of protection in rebelling against Nebuchadnezzar. So the Psukim go on. Hayitzlach, hayimalet hao se'ele, v'hafer brit v'nimlat. Here's that word, hayitzlach, again, that we had back in Parak Tet Vav. Can this rebellious behavior succeed? Can ignoring a brit, an agreement, end well? God is not pleased with Zedekiah for not keeping to the terms of the agreement he made with Nebuchadnezzar. Asher baza et alato v'asher hefer et brito ito b'toch bavel yamut. As a result of this, God says, Zedekiah, who didn't keep to the brit that he made with Nebuchadnezzar, he will die in Bavel. The exile and death of Zedekiah in Bavel is described in detail in both Sefer Melachim and Sefer Yirmiyahu. Let's go to Sefer Melachim and read about the end of Zedekiah's life, and we will see how it jives with these psukim we've been reading and the verses in our parak we are about to read in a moment. Here is Melachim. Vayirod Zedekiah b'melech Bavel v'tavol ha'ir b'matzor ad ashtei esrei shana l'melech Zedekiah. So Zedekiah rebels against the king of Bavel, and the city is attacked with a siege. On the 9th of the month, b'tijal ha'chodesh b'chazak hara'av ba'ir. Hunger in the city. Lo haya lechem la'am ha'aretz. Nobody had any bread to eat. V'tivaka ha'ir. Finally, the city is burst open. B'chol anshei melchama ha'layla derech shara b'ein ha'chomotayim asher hagan ha'melech. B'chastim al'ir saviv. B'yelech derech ha'arava. All the king's warriors, they take the king as the Balaam are surrounding them, and he goes through derech ha'arava. V'yodifu chel kastim achar ha'melech. And the costume, the Bavlim, chase after the king. They finally catch him in Yarvot Yerecho. And all of his army just scatters. So they capture the king. And they take him to the king of Bavel, who is in Rivla. And they take him to judgment. That b'nei Zedekiah shachatu le'inav, and they blind the sons of Zedekiah right in front of his eyes. That enei Zedekiah iver, and then they blind Zedekiah himself. V'yasrehu b'nechushtayim v'yivieihu bavel. And then he is tied up in chains and brought to Bavel. So after watching his sons become blinded and being blinded himself, he is now taken to Bavel, trapped in chains. So let's get back to our parak now and look at the next section of text, which describes God's displeasure with Zedekiah's actions. This section almost seems like it's presenting an alternative nimshal. Im lo alati asher baza uvriti asher hevir netativ berosho. God says, I will pay him back since it's essentially my brit that he went against. When Zedekiah goes against Nebuchadnezzar, God says, it's as though he's going against my own brit. Using the same phrase we heard earlier in Perek Yudbet, Uferasti Alav Rishti, God describes his role in punishing Zedekiah. Uferasti Alav Rishti, v'nitpas b'metzudati, v'aveotiu b'avela, v'nishpatati imosham. Hashem says, I will personally trap him in my net and judge him there, in Bavel. Ma'alo asher ma'albi. God says, I consider this rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar as a ma'al. Ma'al, we recall, was the word used for the sin of Yehuda, represented by the grapevine in Parak Tet Vav. It's strange that God considers Zedekiah's rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar a ma'al, a sin. But what is most surprising is that God says, I consider this ma'al, the sin, as a sin directly against me. In other words, sinning against Nebuchadnezzar is tantamount to sinning against me, Hashem says. It's an affront against God himself. And the obvious question is how? In what way is sinning against Nebuchadnezzar tantamount to sinning against God? Some of the Mefarshim, including Radakan Abarbanel, explained that when Tzidkiyahu took an oath of loyalty to Nebuchadnezzar, he did so using Hashem's name. And therefore, by breaking that oath, Tzidkiyahu caused a chilul Hashem. That's the ma'al. But one way or another, rebelling against Nebuchadnezzar, the protective eagle, is tantamount to rebelling against God. For in fact, God himself is referred to as a protective eagle throughout Tanakh. It is almost as if Nebuchadnezzar is being seen as an agent of God in this case. He has a divine role to play in this drama. Tzidkiyahu, at this moment in history, is meant to be subservient to him, and that is how Yehuda will attain at least a semblance of God's protection. Let's take a minute to look at how the Torah itself portrays God as an eagle. It will help us understand what Yechezkel is telling us now. Here is a pasuk or two from Parsha Hazinu. It gives us a poetic peek into some future moment in history, a moment in which God's wings will protect us. Kinesher yat yarkino al gozalav yirachev, yifros knafav yikasehu, yisa'ehu al efrato. God is compared in those words to an eagle who takes care of the birds in his nest, hovering over its young chicks. Once they've come of age, he spreads his wings and carries them on his pinions, protecting them. An earlier example of God as an eagle appears in Shvot, in Perek Yutet, on the precipice of our marriage, so to speak, to God. In Matan Torah, God compares himself to an eagle when describing how he brought us with great love and care out of Mitzrayim. Atem ra'item asher asiti kemitzrayim, v'asa etchem al kanfei nesharim v'avi etchem elai. God carried us out of Mitzrayim as if on the protective wings of an eagle. And the next words in that pasuk are, V'avi etchem elai, I will bring you to me. It is fascinating. Like Yechezkel's eagle who plants the grapevine, the Torah, centuries before Yechezkel, had God as eagle planting us, so to speak, in the land of Israel. I'm speaking here of the language of Az Yashir, the song that we compose as a nation, as God took us out of Mitzrayim. This song, which we say every day in davening, was meant as an overflowing thanks to God for taking us out of Mitzrayim. And part of that involves the hope and promise for God to plant us once we arrive in the land. So putting it all together, God brought us out of Mitzrayim on the wings of eagles at the time of Har Sinai, where he gave us the Torah. And the next step in the journey that we project is when God brings us to another mountain, a mountain of Israel, the land of our inheritance. To the aim of a titaim of Bahar Nachlatcha, Machon Lushiftacha Paalta, Mikdash Hashem Konanuya Decha. The next thing is God's hands, Konanuya Decha, will prepare the Mikdash. The composite picture suggests, perhaps, that later in history, in Yechezkel, Hashem, as heavenly eagle, is using an earthly eagle, Nebuchadnezzar, as his divine agent. If Tzidkiyahu will only follow through with the brit he made with Nebuchadnezzar, the Mikdash could yet be spared. All this might explain why going against Nebuchadnezzar is like going against God. It's kind of like God appoints Nebuchadnezzar to protect the nation as an eagle. And when they rebel, it's as though they're rebelling against God, their protector. God has no choice but to exile them at that point. Let's get back to the Pesukim of Yechezkel. Kol Mar Hashem Elokim Lakachti Ani Mitzameret Ha'erez Harama V'Natati Mirosh Yom Kotav Rak Ektov. These psukim look forward to a utopian future. Yes, things might have gotten messed up in the present day, but there is still hope for a future in which God personally plants us in the land, in a high mountain, as we saw in High Az Yashir. Sometime in the future, we will be planted in the land again, but not as a low-lying tree subservient to Nebuchadnezzar. Instead, we will be a tall cedar tree on a high mountain. This planted tree will be fruit-bearing and successful. It will be mighty, capable of protecting the people. And the next verse gives us a remarkable vision. In the future, the tables will turn. Instead of needing some earthly eagle to protect her, this new utopian tree will be the one to offer protection itself to the other birds. They will be protected under the shade of its branches. Reflecting on that verse, perhaps there's a special meaning in the choice of the word tishkona, to dwell. Kol tzipor kol kanaf betzel dliotav tishkona. Sounds like the Mishkan, doesn't it, tishkona? Maybe the implication is that these branches will provide a dwelling place, a place lishkon, to rest the Shechina, as a Mishkan, or later a Mikdash, would. We are getting echoes here of that vision in Az Yashir in which God, the great eagle in the sky, who bears us on his pinions, will prepare the Mikdash for us, Mikdash Hashem Konenu Yadecha, as we saw in Az Yashir. And finally, continue these echoes of Az Yashir. The Perek in Yechezkel ends with the planting of this nation. Shatalti ani al har gavoa, behar marom Yisrael eshtalanu, nasa anaf asa pri. Ultimate hope is to be a sovereign nation living in Israel with a Mikdash. The final words of the Perek fill in the details of how this utopian state will be viewed in the world at large. V'yadu kol etzei ha'sadeh ki ani Hashem, hishpalti etz gavoa, higbati etz shafel, hovashi etz lach, v'hifrakti etz yavesh. God's dominion will become obvious to all the other trees of the field, all the other nations. Only God can raise a low-lying tree, dry out waterlogged tree, make a tree blossom. When Israel is finally redeemed, the nations will see God's hand in it. And finally, Ani Hashem Dibarti Vasiti. I am the one who said and did. I am good for my word. If I promise, I will make it happen. Perhaps God's subtle message here is, you, Tzidkiyahu, made promises to Nebuchadnezzar, but you didn't keep them. You diverged from the word of the Brit with him, and ultimately, you left behind your relationship with me. But I, Hashem, am good for my word. I will ultimately redeem Bnei Israel, and I will make them flourish. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilu Nishma, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander.